Well, hey everybody, welcome to episode 198 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by our good friends at Coldwell Banker MidAmerica. Coldwell Banker is rooted in the legacy of our founder, renowned businessman and philanthropist, Marvin Pomeranz. We continue to tell his story through our love of people, homes, and the communities we serve. Our integrity guides our focus to empower people to make the best real estate decisions possible. We pair local ownership and knowledge with the power of an international brand and most advanced technology to elevate the customer experience and expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. All right, we're going to focus on the topic of Suicide Prevention Month tonight, and I've got a couple of guests that I'll be talking to. I also pre-recorded three interviews with a variety of guests. That I already posted these interviews on the Ankeny Fanatic website, so I hope you all have a chance to check those out. I interviewed former Ankeny girls swimming coach Michelle Stout about losing her daughter Jessie to suicide about 5 years ago. I also interviewed my nephew David Holm about losing his cousin to suicide in 2017. And I interviewed Drew Martell of Foundation 2 in Cedar Rapids, who is considered an expert on all things suicide related. So yeah, I would encourage you to check out those interviews. Well, my first guest tonight here in our office is a health and physical education teacher at Ankeny Centennial, and my son Jaden was one of her students back in the day. I asked her to be on the podcast tonight because I saw she had tweeted a few different things early in September related to Suicide Prevention Month, so I could tell that this was a subject that she was passionate about. She is Jody Larson. Jody, thanks for joining me. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Hey, you bet. Well, I know in one of your tweets you mentioned that you were posting in honor of your ring bearer and nephew that you lost to suicide. Can you tell me and our listeners a little bit about him and what you remember most about him?
Yes. I think what I remember most is he was kind of my quiet nephew, but had a little ornery grin. So from when he was very, very little, you always knew he was up to something when you glance at him. And he was just a small town farm boy, loved to be outside, loved to be with the animals, loved to be with family. And, you know, as he grew up and graduated, watched him fumble a little bit, just trying to find what he wanted to do mm-hmm. and be when he grew up. But he had kind of settled into a job, had become a really good dad to a two-year-old little boy. And but he always just had that. He was the big cousin that my son, there's about a six-year difference between them, that he always looked up to Peyton. And he loved to, we'd go fishing when we went down, and just always made sure he checked. He knew the timelines when we'd be coming down, and he'd send me a little note like, when are you going to be here so we can be at the farm, so.
And you told me he was, like his mid-20s when he died, is that right?
25.
25, okay.
Mm-hmm. 25.
Well, I know the researchers in the field still haven't nailed down, you know, how to better predict who's at risk for attempting suicide and whether or when vulnerable people will do it. And you told me earlier that with your nephew, there really wasn't any warning signs, so yeah, I'm sure that made it all the more shocking, didn't it?
Yeah, it really, I mean, I've gone back, I've looked at text messages and social media and, you know, teaching health and PE. I mean, I teach this, you know, I teach this topic and just tried to find out what did we miss? You know, what signs did we miss? Was he giving things away? Was he talking in past tense? Were there signs? And, there really wasn't. In fact, the day I got the call, to meet the life flight, I actually thought maybe my sister-in-law just said the wrong child, because I had a little bit more concerns over my niece and nephew than I had over him. And I called back because I just couldn't believe that he seemed to be in a really good place in his life. And like I said, it kind of found his rhythm and what he was going to do. And we just didn't see it.
Well, yeah, that's kind of amazing. I mean, that just shows you how vulnerable young people can be when, you know, you thought it was the other one.
Right.
Well, I'm sure some people have feelings of guilt when they lose someone that they love because maybe they think they could have said or done something that could have prevented it. And you just kind of touched on that. But, you know, if you were totally caught off guard by what happened, you know, to your nephew, maybe you didn't have, you know, too many guilty feelings, huh?
Actually, I probably struggled more, I think, just because in my brain, I keep thinking we should have seen something. You know, there's always a reason. And we know that specific evening, there was an issue with the mom of his child, like, you know, so a relationship issue there. But again, it shows how impulsive, I guess, kids can be, because it seemed like in conversations and what we've been able to find out, it was just a one night thing. So if that was the trigger, you know, we'll never know. But it does show how fast kids can make, or young adults can make, a decision that's life changing.
Well, I mentioned those other interviews that I did, and one of my other guests lost her daughter when she was 24, and my late brother lost his nephew when he was 20. You know, and there's no doubt that young adults and even younger children can be some of the most vulnerable people in our society. You know, as someone who works with high school students on a daily basis, you know, do you ever get concerned about any of your students if you see some signs of some mental health issues?
I have lots of concerns. I've taught, I think this is year 27 or 28, and the last 10 especially, the concern with mental health with our students is very high. I worry about it a lot, to the extent that I try to do my best in my health class to help build some resiliency, look at some stressors, what are ways we can manage it, who's our circle of support, people around you that you have. I've gone to, when Dr. Lindemann was my administrator, I would go down with things for my kids saying, we've got to be better. You know, we've got to have, make sure we have connections. Our kids have connections at school. You want to be that adult if they need an adult to help them get through those times. And I think as parents, I hope that my kids have that adult. It's not always going to be us as parents. You know, I'm just relieved if I feel like my own kids have an adult that they would go to maybe before me, that I can be that for some of our students, because it definitely is a concern. You know, I've taken steps with different kids to get them the help that they need, and but I just know there's lots more going through that we don't catch.
Well, no, the two of us connected over social media, and social media can be both a good thing and a bad thing. Do you think social media could be a factor with some of these kids that have, you know, issues like that?
I do. I think, again, you know, it's like all of us. What's your purpose of using it? And I think it can be used for really good things. In class, we talk about, you know, does it bring you fulfillment or does it cause you stress? And, you know, a lot of the kids will admit that it causes them stress. Either they're missing out on things other people are doing, or people put this picture perfect world out there that's not necessarily the case. And they feel this need to have a picture perfect world. And when it's not, they're not sure how to respond to it. So I definitely think that plays a role for kids, because, you know, I try to think what else has really changed in the last, you know, 20 years of teaching, and that's a piece. And, you know, the stress level and our anxiety and depression in students has skyrocketed right now.
Well, as a health teacher, you know, do you ever talk to your students about suicide? And do you feel like, you know, it's a subject that should be talked about more, and that, you know, if a kid is having some issues, that maybe then they can find the resources that they need?
I do. I actually, when my nephew died by suicide, that was the unit I was in at school. It's definitely changed in the last 6 years, how I talk about it and what we do, but, we do a ton of precursors on things we can do to handle our stress and to manage it and have things in place. And then we do a lot with looking at, signs, within themselves and within their friends. We talk about, you know, who are your adults at school, at home, you know, anywhere at work that you can go to if you're feeling this way. We go through resources. We're very fortunate in Ankeny. We have EFR through our insurance, through our school, that also the kids have and their families have, so many free opportunities for some counseling. So we try to make sure kids know that, so that they've got some, you know, an immediate connection if they need it. I think it needs talked about more. There's definitely that. Again, in all my years of teaching, we kind of shifted away from, if you talk about it, they're going to do it, so you can't talk about it. And I think the reality is, when we talk about it, kids know they're not alone.
Well, and there does seem to be a stigma around mental health, and maybe that's one reason why some people don't talk about it, right?
Yeah. And I do think that's getting better. And I say that, and, you know, when you read my blog, you saw that, you know, that's been probably one of my biggest things I've hung back on is, you know, I came from this farm family and this is how we deal with things and we move forward. And I think sometimes it's still rooted in who we are, that sometimes people see it as a weakness. And I think we've got to, as a community and a nation, get better at that.
Well, I know there are a few different ways that people in Iowa can get access to help if they are having suicidal thoughts. There are a lot of resources available online at yourlifeiowa.org and at 988lifeline.org. And perhaps the easiest way to get immediate help is to simply call 988, and that number provides free and confidential support for people in distress. I also noticed, on the Your Life Iowa website that they have a message that says, we won't judge what you've been through. We'll do everything we can to help you through some of life's most difficult challenges. You know, I think that is a really important message because, like we just talked about, you know, with the stigma with suicide, people shouldn't be afraid to talk about it. I mean, you know, they need to get the help that they deserve and need, and one way to do that is to talk about it.
Right. And I think that's one of the things I try really hard to tell my students is, you know, if you hear it, if you see signs, I think sometimes kids want to deal with things themselves within their friends. And I'm always like, you know, to this day, somebody knew my nephew had a gun. They knew that he was at risk that night and nobody made a call. So that's something that I always tell students, like, I would rather that person never speak to you again and they're here the next day, being afraid to tell an adult. So I always tell them, if you're concerned, you hear something, see something, you've got to go to an adult. So hopefully as our students see that, we'll get more of that support behind them.
Well, I'll ask you this question. I asked some of my other guests this question as well. How often do you think about your nephew these days? I mean, it has been a while, but I mean, do you still think about him a lot?
I do. You know, if you've lost anybody close, it never goes away. There's times that it's stronger. So we had certain holidays. 4th of July is always hard because we were always with him on the 4th of July. So whenever the 4th comes, a little bit before, I'm, kind of looking for my text that he might send in. It happened on Halloween. So every fall, I'll never forget it because it was a gorgeous, beautiful Halloween morning when I got the call. So I always think about him on Halloween. He was a big 4-H kid, so we do county fair, state fairs. So yeah, there's those, it's not daily like it once was, but there's lots of little things that, throughout your day and, throughout the months of the year that trigger.
Sure.
Yep.
When you said that you never get over it, and I can certainly understand that, but I mean, you obviously have to cope. I mean, did you find that it took some time that you could find a way to cope with it and a way to grieve and get through that process?
For me, it's probably been, again, I come from that, like, we're just going to move forward mentality. And I think your faith is important. This event challenged that for me. So I've been working through that process again. And I know just looking back, I didn't talk to my kids about it like I should have. Had one that was a freshman in college, and he was playing football. So he ran home and then he ran back and we're like, hope he's okay. My girls were at home and, so it's never too late, I guess is my point. Like I've had some of those conversations I should have had right when it happened years later. With them, to make sure they understood and that we should have dealt with things differently. So, you do find ways to cope and but that hole in your heart's still there. And you've got those things that when it's bigger than other times, but yeah, I definitely think again, the stigma of seeking help, whether you're the person left behind, I think that's the other thing people don't understand is the impact it has on the family left behind. Because I really lost two nephews that day because his little brother has not dealt with it. And it's been 4 or 5 years now since we've seen him because he's made some poor choices because I think he didn't deal with the grief of it.
Hmm. Well, would you have any advice for other people who, experience a similar loss, a way to cope with it?
I think you've got to lean on whatever works for you, whether it's your faith and you go there to talk to somebody, whether you go to some counseling, it's not a normal process. It's not a normal cycle of life for people. And so I think we all need somebody to walk you through that and walk you through the feelings. Cause you go from being sad to being mad, to being angry, to, all the grief cycle. And I think my suggestion is if you've been through this, your family needs to talk to somebody and that to know that again, that with that stigma, that's okay to get that support.
Well, Jody, I really appreciate you coming in tonight and talking about this. I think it's an important topic to discuss and I really appreciate you doing it tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
You bet. All right. You're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. Gershman Mortgage is also a sponsor of the podcast. Gershman, the Midwest premier mortgage lender, is proud to be part of the Ankeny Fanatic podcast. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home, vacation home, upgrade, or remodel an existing home, or refinance your current mortgage, Gershman Mortgage is here to help. With over 60 years in the mortgage industry, they have security, experience, and unmatched service. You can visit their Ankeny office, call 515-964-5952, or visit Gershman.com to get pre-approved today. Well, my other guest tonight is an Ankeny resident who teaches and coaches at Bondurant Farrar, and he's also done some coaching in the Ankeny School District. He coaches 8th grade boys basketball over there with the Hawks. He's also a good friend of mine. He is Rick Dobish. Rick, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
You bet, Dan. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing great.
Hey, you bet. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast tonight. I've interviewed a few different people in the last week who have lost a loved one to suicide, and those are not easy discussions to have, but I guess you're one of the lucky ones because you had somebody very close to you who attempted suicide a few years ago, but fortunately, his attempt was unsuccessful. The person that I'm talking about is your son, Jackson, who played on Ankeny State Championship football team in 2012 and then moved across town when Ankeny Centennial opened, and he was the Jaguars' third leading tackler in his senior season in 2013. So can you talk about, you know, what Jackson was doing with his life after high school and, you know, what led up to this suicide attempt?
You know, there's got to be a multitude of items that lead into that, but, you know, accomplished football player, that was his sport, and at the end of his senior year, we looked at all of his options, and Jackson's 5'8 at the time, about 210 pounds, and he was playing defensive line for Fontana at Centennial. And he had a desire to go into Division I football, but he knew that it was unlikely given his size. But he still had the mentality that he could do it, so had all the offers from the D3 schools, the Simpson, the Central, the BV, but him and a friend decided to go up to Iowa Central thinking that they would work hard for a couple of years and maybe get a chance to walk on it, in his mind, maybe in Iowa State. It didn't transpire. I mean, the community college life, you know, not just Iowa Central, but all of them, they had about 180 kids in there. And so he's fighting for one spot on the defensive side of the ball, and it just did not transpire. So they went, him and his roommate went about, you know, 4 months, they quit football before the season was over and then ended up coming back to Ankeny after the semester break. And that may or may not, you know, I mean, and whether or not Jackson knows exactly what transpired in his mind, but I think coming back and then he went and did a little bit of work outside of college before he went back to Iowa State. But at that time then, you know, as I like to describe it, he kind of lost his group of friends. You know, I can't imagine going to college as a freshman when your friends are juniors, but that's exactly what transpired. So he was a little bit, quote unquote, behind the eight ball based on his decision to go to Iowa Central. Now, backing up into that, whether or not it played into a part of it as well, but my older sister committed suicide, I had a nephew commit suicide. My dad was an alcoholic, and I did some research when I was younger. So whether or not there's a quote-unquote gene or something in addition to life's events that you know, led to this issue, I don't know. But we started to see a change, at least externally then, after he was age 21, which created a whole multitude of issues, because at that time, his mom and I really couldn't do anything from a legality standpoint because he's 21 years old. You know, Jackson has some depression issues and he'll freely talk to them. And he's done, you know, extensively told people about his issues. But we started to see it and we started to talk to him and we started to do what we could as far as counseling and you know, getting help from the depression standpoint. But it all led to the fact that it was up to him. I mean, we couldn't, he was not a, and it really came down in emergency rooms. It was, he's not a threat to himself or to anybody else. He has a sound mind and we're going to release him. And we did that a couple times, you know, probably ages 21, 22, 23. At that time, he was still going to Iowa State. Everything was good. His brother was up there, his brother's girlfriend. You know, he's lifting weights, but the core group of friends and life events had kind of moved around and maybe passed him by or just weren't close to him as they were when he was in high school. And yeah, we knew it and we did everything we could to try to prevent it. But the sad part of it was he was of age. And of course, like most depression and mental health, they would say they're fine. I'm fine, Dad. I'm good, Dad. So as many calls and discussions as you could have, you really don't know what's going on the inside. it finally came to a head. And adding one more thing to that, and I see it a lot in school, and I try to be as supportive as I can. I think he just really didn't know, okay, what do I do with my life? What do I do? I mean, I'm not going to play football. What am I going to do? Do I want to pick this as a major, this as a major? And I told him, I said, you know, life events change. I'm a teacher, but I'm a CPA. I spent most of my career in accounting and in finance, but I decided to be a teacher. So it's okay to not pick the right, you know, major or career path, because it may not be the right major or career path. But there was one fateful night on a Monday. In fact, the 4-year anniversary was about 3 weeks ago, where I got a call about midnight from actually Jared, my younger son's girlfriend, and Jackson had texted her and said, I took a bunch of pills and drank a bunch of wine, and I'm getting in my car and I'm going to go find a train track. Well, at that time I was in Ankeny and he was in Ames, and I immediately jumped in the car and tried to find him, did everything I could. He wasn't answering his phone naturally. I had, which was amazing, the Story County Sheriff's helping me out. I started to drive around and then realized I have no idea where to go. I mean, there's train tracks everywhere in Story County and around Ames. So I went near his apartment, and the Story County Sheriff said, you know, we might have found him where there's a car that just went into a cornfield just on the west side of Ames. And so I immediately met him there, and you know, God bless the sheriff's department. They said, do you want us to go down? And I said, no, I'll go down. And I immediately yelled his nickname, Tank. I said, Tank, you okay? And he said, yeah, I'm fine, Dad. And he told me, Dad, I you know, we talked about his depression. He said, I'm not going to die. First thing he said, I'm not going to die, Dad. He had done research, and maybe this is typical of, you know, kids, adults, anybody. He knew what he took. He knew it wouldn't kill him in the dosage that he took. But I think in his mind, he was just escaping, and this had finally come to the point where he was hoping that, you know, he would get over the hump. I think, you know, he was on the bubble. 50-50 is what I would probably say, running from his troubles, but also, man, he sure enjoyed life, and he was accomplished in so many things that he didn't really want to lose that. So we got him out of the cornfield, got him out of his car, and spent a horrible night at Mary Greeley, getting his you know, stomach pumped and charcoal and all of that. And, you know, turned it around. And then that finally, to me, hit in what his mind was rock bottom. And we were blessed that Mary Greeley had a spot in their mental health unit up in Ames. He spent 7 days there. And honestly, Dan, we visited him numerous times. And, you know, I would let him lead the conversation, but he would immediately say, Dad, I am so blessed. Look, you know, the people that we have here, when we talk in group, they have so many issues going on in their life, and my life is nowhere near as troublesome as theirs. I think that's what finally led to the point where he is today, which, is still, I mean, I don't think anybody with depression's ever 100% over it. But he knows how to deal with it now. He knows how to manage it, and God bless it. You know, he's still with us.
Well, it sounds like he was very lucky, but it also was a wake up call for him that, you know, yeah, maybe his life isn't as bad as some other people.
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. I mean, it was a crazy scenario, and as I look back on it, and I know there's adults out there that are listening, the most frustrating thing as a parent is just that, where you want to be able to do anything you can. But in his case, and in a lot of cases, he's 21 years of age or older. And at that point, you know, his mother and I would just be in a panic mode, and the doc would say his mental state is fine. He's not a threat to himself or to anybody else, and he wants to leave. And so I can't put him in the hospital. I mean, I can't. He's got to want to get help. And so, like I said, we did that two, if not three times, before that one night, in September. So, I am blessed, where we're at today.
Well, I don't know if he still has to take medication for depression or not, but did he do some therapy, or does he still do some therapy?
You know, he was probably one of the unique ones. I think his biggest therapy was the 7 days that he spent at Mary Greeley, and that really turned him around. Now, here again, we probably were close before that in terms of getting him some help, but the state, and I'm sure the country, is in a situation where the facilities are overflowing, and even overflowing, this was before the pandemic. You know, there were times where Mayor Greeley had no spots. And so they would say, okay, Jackson, you can go to a spot up in Northeast Iowa. Well, naturally, a kid in college, and he's going to say no. And that's exactly where we were at. So we were blessed, really, at the time that this transpired, that Mary Greeley did have an open bed and could get him in there for 7 days. And he did some therapy, obviously, afterwards. I think his biggest therapy now is communication and just, the openness that he has with the fact that mental illness is everywhere, and it's okay to talk about it and for people to be out there to help.
Well, yeah, I know you told me that he has been very open about what happened to him, and he did not have a problem with you coming on tonight, to talk about it, which kind of surprised me. You also said that he has posted some things on social media about it. So is he trying to help others then, who might be having some mental health issues and or suicidal thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that was one part of the recovery, that he finally came to the realization that he's not alone. Your previous guests and even some of the issues we've had, whether it be here or schools surrounding us, he's not alone. So he hasn't done it in a while, but there was a time where he posted extensively on his social media accounts and said, hey, I'm here. If you guys ever need to talk, somebody message me. You may be, on the other side of the continent or whatever. But don't be afraid to, if it happens to be Jackson Dobish in Ankeny, Iowa, send me a message and I'll do what I can to help you out, which, makes me feel really good.
Yeah, my son's just a couple years younger than Jackson, and he certainly had, his share of struggles. So I think all kids that age, go through some sort of issues.
there's no doubt. I mean, I think we went through them, but we really didn't understand what we were going through at the time. Like I said, my brother's son committed suicide on his 21st birthday. Had a variety of things going on from small town South Dakota, which I could understand. But I think, you and I had talked a little bit previously, some of the changes in the world have probably had some things to do with it. And it probably had a lot to do with my nephew's situation and even Jackson's situation as well.
Well, I know Jackson is an accomplished power lifter. What else is he doing with his life right now?
Yeah, still doing a little bit of powerlifting. More so, he's moved into the coaching and writing programs for individuals that do still lift weights extensively. He's also the head maintenance individual, whatever you want to call him, maintenance manager for Bricktown, the apartment complex right across from Centennial.
Oh, okay.
Which you're probably saying, doesn't he have a kinesiology degree? Well, he sure does. But that, to me, gives me a warm feeling in my heart that he said, I'm going to do what makes me happy. He loves the fact that he's a kinesiologist. He knows so much about health and nutrition. But he also found a love for, fixing garbage disposals, which is tremendous. And he lives for it now, and it keeps him going for his day-to-day job. And I'm blessed that, here you're talking to a teacher who never thought he'd be a teacher when I was Jackson's age. So it makes me feel really good that he's decided to do what he loves to do.
Well, that's great. Yeah, my son, I got a psychology degree, and now he's selling medicinal marijuana. So how he got from point A to point B, I'm not sure, but
we're happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Well, Rick, you're an educator, so you deal with teenagers every day in your job, and obviously young people are some of the most vulnerable ones in our society, especially when it comes to suicide. Do you ever get concerned about some of the kids that you have in class or on the football team, either because you know some of them are dealing with some tough issues or because maybe, someone is exhibiting some signs of having some issues?
Yeah, I mean, every day. And maybe that was partially my reason to get into education, maybe from a backwards standpoint. But one of the things I tell all of my classes, the first day of class when I teach them, is just what I told you, because Jackson's been very open with me. I tell him I came from an alcoholic. I tell him that my sister committed suicide, my nephew committed suicide, and my son attempted suicide. And that, kids, I don't know what you're going through, but first off, I love every one of you, and if you ever need to talk, you come in and talk to me. I'm here for you. I think we have to be open and honest with them. Now, I'm a little blessed in the sense that my kids are already grown and gone. So I can spend, yes, every teacher should spend as much time as it takes with them. But man, if you're starting out there, or if you have kids at home, you know, your life is precious and demanding. I'm not there. I'm at the end of my career. So my door is always open and open for as long as it takes. And so, yes, I'm always looking at kids and trying to get a handle on, you know, what's going on with them and letting them know that I'm here if you need absolutely anything. And it's out there. I mean, it's not going to go away. It's, you know, in every small school. I mean, my town was 600 where my nephew committed suicide, and we've got, you know, large schools here, and we certainly see it, you know, every place, and I'm not immune over at Bondurant.
Well, does the school have any protocols in place for what, you know, someone like you should do if you see a kid who is struggling? Do you have counselors at the school you can refer a student to?
Yeah, and we do a great job of continually training the educators and everybody on that. I don't think you can have enough counselors. We have three now. We added a third this year, and we added another administrator to kind of just, you know, continually work with the kids and understand what's going on with them. There's a lot of life lessons. I mean, everybody has a story. And it's the days of, you know, like when we grew up, when I grew up, when mom and dad, and we were home at 5 o'clock and we were eating supper, and, you know, you had three TV stations to watch. I mean, those days are over. There's so many things now that throw a wrench in every kid's life. And we just have to be there for it. And yeah, Bondurant does a great job, in my opinion, of handling those issues and being aware of them.
Well, this is something that Jody and I talked about just a few minutes ago. You know, you and I both know that social media can be a great tool for some things, but it can also be a very negative place for young kids to be. And many of them probably spend way too much their time on platforms like Twitter and Instagram. Do you think that social media can be a factor for some kids who have some mental health issues, you know, if not the outright cause of it?
Yeah, there's no question. And that's tough. I mean, my sons are, you know, in their 20s, but it wasn't that long ago when, you know, they were in high school and both had cell phones. And, you know, as a parent, you can do things. You can limit their screen time. You can block certain apps. But the kids are so smart now that they can, you know, pretty much circumvent anything that a parent does per se. But yeah, it is a big concern. And, you know, I do my best to tell them that, you know, don't believe everything you read. Don't believe everything you hear. And the best case is to just get rid of it. And I open it, I mean, as you know as well, I take a trip every June, and I take a lot of social media breaks, a lot of technology breaks, and I tell the kids, you know, it's okay to put that down and not worry about it. Certainly not what you're reading or hearing or seeing, but sometimes it's just good not to even pick that thing up, because it is going to affect their jobs. I mean, there's going to be some kids that get out of school and are going to have a hard time, you know, exiting themselves from social media during the day and doing their job. And I said, guys, you might as well start right now.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I know there was a young girl, maybe 15 years old, that I read about recently, and I can't remember where she lived, but she was tricked into sending a topless photo to somebody, and then the recipient of that photo threatened to post it on social media if she didn't send more photos of herself, you know, and then things kind of snowballed from there. She was just so distraught about it that she ended up, you know, committing suicide. And I mean, what an awful tragedy. I know she probably didn't see any good way out of that situation, but regardless of how embarrassed she was, I mean, it was only going to be a temporary thing. I mean, what a sad, sad deal that was.
Oh, most definitely. And it is, like you said, the social media aspect and even TikTok, which you didn't reference to, and it's almost impossible for even a teacher or a parent to stay up on it. They have a Be Real thing now where you have to immediately post a video if your buzzer goes off or whatever. The social media creators know exactly what they're doing. I mean, they do. They know what triggers a kid's, you know, mentality to be on social media. And, you know, it's not going to get any better in the short term. And it is kind of sad. I mean, we're so blessed that we didn't have it. And I wish it wasn't as extreme as it is, but we got to live with it and deal with it. And as teachers and parents, you know, do your best to limit it. Within reason, that's all I can say.
Well, hey, we'll finish up on this one, Rick. I've talked about this with my other guests, too, about the stigma around mental health and suicide. And I think all of my guests have said that, you know, that they feel like it is important. You kind of touched on this earlier, that it is important to talk about these issues and not be afraid to talk about them, and that they should be in the open. And people need to get the help that they need and they deserve.
Yeah. And I do think that at least the students that I've dealt with at Bondurant are doing a great job. I mean, they're not afraid to. And maybe it's because I'm open and honest. But I'm okay. I mean, if you've got depression issues, if you've got any types of issues, if you want to talk about, you know, and kids will come right up to me and say, I had a good therapy session yesterday with my therapist, and they're 15, 16, 17 years old. And I say, that's awesome. Because, you know, I'm not alone. I went to therapy after I lost a couple of close friends 7, 8 years ago. So nobody's immune from the situations that transpire in life. But it is life, and it's enjoyable. I mean, I'll leave you on one thing that probably so those of you that don't know, I spent about 30 years in industry as a CPA and then went back to college for a year, year and a half before I became a teacher. And one of the classes I had at UNI where I went back to school, one of the educators who had been teaching for, you know, 45 years, she was retiring, and she made the comment, just remember, it's only high school to me. And I said, boy, you're so right. I mean, this is not... I'm going to do my damnedest to teach these kids what I know about the real world. But don't forget, it's just high school. I mean, it's a perfect week. It's homecoming week at Bondurant, which means, you know, I've already looked at my Friday and we've got shortened classes. We're doing absolutely nothing on Friday. It's homecoming week. And don't forget that, you know, Dan and you and I talk a lot of times over alcoholic beverages. And we're not talking about what we learned in biology or chemistry or any type of class from high school. We're talking about everything else that was the fun part of it, you know?
That's for sure.
Yeah. And if I can get the kids to understand that that's my main principle is to teach you and get you ready. And I've been blessed. I've got some unbelievable accounting majors at college right now that came out of Bondurant. But I also know that, you know, not everybody is going to go into accounting. Some kids are going to graduate from high school and immediately start the working, you know. And as a result, I want you to understand that I'm here to help you for, you know, if you go into accounting, great. But, man, if you need to text me because you're having a bad day and I haven't taught you for 2 years, let's talk. So that's what's as important or more than me.
Oh, for sure. Well, you talked about the path that your life took, and I don't talk about this a whole lot, but I feel blessed because I was one of those people that knew what I wanted to do my whole life. I mean, I went through high school knowing that I wanted to be a sports reporter. And high school is not easy for anybody. I mean, I played sports and I didn't know what I wanted to do, but it wasn't easy.
Exactly.
I mean, I was a shy kid. I'm much more outgoing now. But anyway, you know, college was fun. I knew what I wanted to do, and you know, the rest is history. But no, I thought it was important to touch on this subject this week with September being Suicide Prevention Month. And man, you've certainly given us some compelling information, some stories. You know, sorry to hear about all the issues in your family beyond just Jackson, but
yeah, I mean, and I mean, what I would tell any listeners is talk to your son or daughter, talk to your spouse, talk to your parents, talk to your friends, and just tell them you're there for them. And, you know, don't be upset if they're not willing to share stuff, because the mentality of somebody sometimes with depression or mental health, is they really have to reach a point where they want help, and it's easy for some, it's hard for others. So,
all right, Ruck. Well, hey, thanks for coming in tonight. I appreciate it, man.
You bet. Class of 83.
You bet. All right, you've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. At Coldwell Banker, you're not one of many clients, you're our most important client. We listen to your needs to develop long-lasting relationships and provide the best services, professional support, and resources in the industry. We are constantly exploring new and innovative ways to elevate your experience and exceed your expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. Well, I want to thank my guests again for coming in tonight. We had Jody Larson from Ankeny Centennial High School and Rick Dobish from Bondurant Farrar. Really appreciate the time from those folks, and I hope you people enjoyed the conversations with them about the Suicide Prevention Month topic. Come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. I think we're going to be focusing on Tuesday night's big Jag Hog Volleyball Showdown.